Welcome to another installment of Two Sports Nuts. I am Jerome Schell. I'll start off this week with Major League Baseball. The Phillies are killing it this season. The Pirates are spinning their wheels like they've done the last couple of seasons. The Phillies are one of the surprise teams in Major League Baseball right now. You have the White Sox over in the American League leading the Central Division as a surprise, but over in the National League, the Philadelphia Phillies in contention for the NL East at this point in time is a surprise, fighting early on for a wild card, still competitive after a month of baseball in a city where their teams have sputtered, a bad season for the Eagles this past year, Flyers sneaking their way into the playoffs, but not competitive against the Capitals, went down 0-3, were able to keep it going for a little while, but really weren't competitive in that series. To have the Phillies right now competitive makes up for not having a basketball team. The 76ers are there. They suck. Philadelphia sports fans have something to enjoy this summer. 19-14 on the season, 4-3 since the last show. The Pirates are 17-15, 2-4 since the last show. They were roughed up by the Cubs, lost all three games. Allowed 7 runs in 2 of the games, 6 in the other. Cole and Nice both got roughed up. A lot of what the Phillies have done is through the division. They're 10-6 in the NL East, while the Pirates are 10-9 inside the NL Central. The Phillies have held their own against the top two teams in the NL East, 3-3 against the Mets, 4-2 against the Nationals. If you want to have a chance to win your division, you need to play well against the teams in your division, especially the top teams. You expect to beat Atlanta, you expect to be competitive against Miami, take 2 out of 3 when you play the Marlins, but the Nationals and Mets, that's where they have to make their mark, and they've been able to accomplish that so far this season. They need to do better against losing teams outside of the division, 5-5 against teams that aren't that good. 4-3 outside of the division against teams that are winners, swept Cleveland, 1-3 against St. Louis. They've been able to be competitive against teams that are expected to be in the playoffs when it comes to the National League and a team in Cleveland that's supposed to contend for the AL Central crown. You look at the Pirates, outside of their division, they've played teams with losing records. Even though Detroit is perennially a team competing for the AL Central crown, they have a losing record this season. Pirates have played the losers so far in the National League West. The Pirates are 7-6 against those opponents, not getting the job done against the bottom feeders they've played. 1-2 against San Diego. That's what stands out, not the fact they lost 3-4 to the Tigers, which is a good team, and by the end of the season should have a winning record. At this point in time, a losing record for the Tigers are scuffling early on. That's where the majority of the Pirates' losses to teams with losing records occurred. Took 3 from the Rockies, series went from a 4-game to a 3-gamer, snow, forced a game to be postponed, will be made up at a later date. They've lost 4 to Cincinnati inside the division. That's horrible. Cincinnati is a rebuilding team. They're going to be a dumpster fire all year long, and the Pirates haven't taken advantage. You expect them to be in a battle with Chicago and St. Louis all season long for the division. They have to beat Cincinnati, they have to beat Milwaukee. They did so against the Brewers, but not against the Reds, a team they've struggled against perennially. Gerrit Cole hasn't beaten them yet in his career. It's not time to panic for Pirates fans, but you're starting to get worried. The Cubs are pulling away with this division. You're starting to get into that point where you forget about the division for a little while and focus more on the wild card. 5-1 against the Cardinals, which is critical in a wild card chase. While the Pirates have struggled this past week, their average dipped. They are now second in the majors in batting average at .280 behind the Red Sox. Went down 7 points. It continues to decline. They're not walking as much. They're striking out more. They keep climbing the ladder in strikeouts. This is a team that had started to form an identity, being more disciplined at the plate. As the season's worn on, they focused more on hitting home runs. McCutcheon's average continues to decline. It's affecting the batting average for the Pirates, starting to have an effect in the batting average from Jungho Gong now that he's returned. In his first game back, he had 2 home runs, catapulted the Pirates past the Cardinals. That's a big spark for the lineup. Takes some of the pressure off of McCutcheon, lengthens the lineup, move Freeze to first, gives more depth to the bench. Freeze can be on the bench, and you can have Jaso hitting. Sean Rodriguez is available to play second, first, short. This team has a lot of options on the bench, and for the lineup, right now, 1-8, they're solid. And if they can get the pitching in check, they'll be competing for the division. Every year you talk about the Pirates needing hitting, this is the year they need pitching. You compare the Pirates' batting woes lately as the average continues to dip. The Phillies dropped a point in the average down to 228. Still near the bottom of the league when it comes to hitting for average, putting the ball in play. 14th in the National League, 27th in the majors. 259 strikeouts. They're starting to come down when it comes to strikeouts. The rest of the league is starting to come up to their numbers. They're 15th in the majors. Only 8 more strikeouts than the Pirates at the plate, but the Pirates have an average that's near the top of the league, first in the National League, second overall, which is counteracting their strikeouts. Plus, they're walking way more than the Phillies. 131 walks for the Pirates compared to 81 for the Phillies. 50 more walks. That's counteracting the strikeouts, also helping out with the batting average. They're stringing hits and walks together. They're getting more runs. The only problem is their pitching isn't getting the job done. And that's what the Phillies are using to be competitive in the National League. The Phillies' pitching is getting the job done. The Pirates are struggling on the mound. The Phillies' starters, ERA 3.65. Compare that to the Pirates, 4.31. That's not good enough. The Phillies' starters, phenomenal ERA. Their bullpen is hurting them a bit at 4.31 with their ERA. Their bullpen has the same ERA as the Pirates starters, which means the Phillies starters need to go deeper into games. The Pirates bullpen, 4.33, almost the same as their starters. Working Jared Hughes back into the bullpen, they're trying to get a couple guys going in the bullpen, and they still have two starters in that rotation that shouldn't be in Locke and Nicasio that need to come out. You could also make a case for Jonathan Neese. In his last 3 outings, he's 0-2, pitched 16 and 2/3 innings, allowed 26 hits, 14 runs, all earned. You can't have a starter throw 16 and 2/3 innings and allow 14 runs through 3 starts. He's not going deep enough. He's allowing way too many runs, even though he only allowed 3 runs in his last start against the Reds. All 3 came on home runs. Maybe they kept him out there a little too long in that game against the Reds, but you have to push him. Your top 3 starters have to go 6 innings at least. You want to push him to a 7th inning if you can. 3 starters in this rotation that are struggling. They have 2 guys in the minors that should be up here, and Jameson Taillon and Tyler Glasnow, but we all know the Pirates won't do that until Super 2 kicks in. It's frustrating. Teams like the Pirates that are small market teams, that have owners that aren't going to spend a lot of money, that narrative, that also don't have a good television contract. The Pirates' television contract is worth the same as Zach Greinke's contract is out there in Arizona. When you're getting $20 million, I've seen 18, from your television contract, that's not enough. There's no way you can put a roster together with that small amount of money coming from your television contract, your local TV deal. When the entire amount you're making from the television deal is worth the same as one player's contract in another team, that's horrible. And as long as that's the case, the Pirates are always going to hold guys like Taillon, Glasnow, and others in the minors because they need to get that Super 2 status, lengthen years of control they have to stay competitive as long as they have this current salary structure in place. Look at the Washington Nationals. They just signed Steven Strasburg to a 7-year deal worth $175 million. You'll never see that for the Pirates. They have Cole that would warrant a contract like that. Maybe one of these guys, when they come up in their next deal, would warrant a contract like that. They'll never get it. When you have teams like Washington, who can give one player a contract worth $175 million, which the Pirates will never do, you can't expect the Pirates to compete for division titles, and it's frustrating. The Phillies are in a rebuild mode. They're 19-14. The Pirates are supposed to be building off of a spectacular season from last year. They're 17-15, using 3 pitchers that shouldn't even be on this roster, burying 2 guys in the minors, and it's all related to money. It's always going to be related to money, and as a Pirates fan, it is frustrating. After these 2 games in Atlanta for the Phillies, they have a 9-game homestand. They'll host the Reds, Marlins, and Braves. The Pirates have 1 game left in Cincinnati. Then they're at Chicago for 3. Then a 10-game homestand, 4 against the Braves, 3 against the Rockies, and 3 against the Diamondbacks. I want to get back to something I complained about earlier in the season, the new rule at second base. I've started to notice a lot of shortstops are just taking the out at second base, not trying to get a double play. What you're doing is lengthening baseball games, even though they're trying to shorten them. I don't like this 30-second clock for pitching coaches when they go to the mound. It's not uniform. Some places they'll start the clock as soon as the coach leaves the dugout. Some will start when he hits the mound. these coaches. They're not going to run a 4-2-40. You're looking at pitching coaches only getting 20 seconds at the mound. They should be getting 30 seconds. And even 30 seconds isn't long enough to get the point across that you want to make. Give them a full minute. You give pitchers way too much time when they come in from the bullpen to warm up. You can give pitching coaches more than 30 seconds to get a point across when a pitcher's struggling, but that's Major League Baseball for you. Now to the NBA. Steph Curry was named MVP of the league for the second year in a row. He's the first ever unanimous MVP in the league. First player to ever make 300 three-point shots, also the first to ever make 400 three-point shots. Deserving of the award, deserving of being the first unanimous MVP. Missed the first three games of the series against the Portland Trailblazers in the second round of the NBA playoffs. Warriors had a 2-1 series lead. He comes back in game 4. They go to overtime. He makes history, scoring 17 points in the overtime session. Leads them to a 132-125 victory. They're up 3-1. Should be able to put the Trailblazers away. Make it to the Western Conference Finals. The Thunder have a 3-2 series lead over the Spurs. After losing game 1 to San Antonio, 124-92, losing by 32 points, not showing up in game 1, everyone was talking about how this could be a quick series, how the Thunder wouldn't be able to respond. All Durant and Westbrook did was take down game 2, winning 98-97, and have won 2 of the 3 games since then, and have a chance to knock the Spurs out in game 6. They could give Golden State some trouble, but I still expect the Warriors to make it to the NBA Finals, where they should face the Cleveland Cavaliers. LeBron and the Cavs are 8-0 this postseason. They swept the Pistons, then the Hawks. They're awaiting the winner of the Heat and Raptors. That series is tied at 2. Plenty of rest for the Cavs. I don't expect them to have any rust. I expect them to beat whomever comes out of that series between Miami and Toronto. Still expect to see the Warriors and Cavaliers in the NBA Finals again. The big news is that Steph Curry is the first unanimous MVP of the NBA. To the National Hockey League, and the Pittsburgh Penguins eliminated the Washington Capitals in 6 games, winning game 6 in overtime 4-3. The Kessel, Bonino, Hagelin line scored all 4 goals in game 6 for the Penguins, Bonino with the game winner on a rebound. The Penguins had a 3-0 lead. The Caps made it 3-1 going into the third. Justin Williams scored to make it 3-2. Then the Penguins cleared the puck out of play from their own zone. That's a penalty. While killing that penalty, Nick Bonino knocked the puck out of play, made it a 5-on-3. Right after they killed the first penalty, Ian Cole cleared the puck out of play, out of his own zone. Another 5-on-3. This time the Caps were able to score on the power play, tied the game, sent it to overtime. One of the greatest defensive plays in the playoffs will always be overlooked because it happened in a losing effort. You thought the Penguins had won the game. Shot gets past Holtby, but Jay Beagle knocks the puck out of midair. I don't know how he was able to do it. Wide open net, puck gets shot, it's knocked out of midair by Beagle. Everyone in the building thinks it's a goal, but it's stopped. The Capitals have life, but a couple minutes later, Bonino with the game winner. Caps get bounced in 6. Now all the questions begin again for the Capitals. Does this team need to be blown up? Can Ovechkin ever win a cup? Will he ever get past the conference semifinals? Barry Trotz has never been to a conference finals. What do they need to add in the offseason? The return of Brooks Orpik helped the Penguins. They scored 2 power play goals on his double minor for high-sticking Patrick Hornquist. Brooks Orpik not only affected games 2-5, he also affects game 6. He had that 3-game suspension for injuring Olimata, and they both were back for game 6. The goal Hagelin scored was deflected off of a shot from Mata, only fitting that Mata plays a factor in the game. The Penguins made a mistake trying to go for the 4th goal of the game, not sitting back, playing defense up 3-1 in the 3rd. They should have shut it down instead of trying to go for the kill shot. Had to go to overtime to end the series. Now they advance to take on the Tampa Bay Lightning, who eliminated the New York Islanders in 5 games. The Penguins will need more from Crosby and Malkin if they want to knock out the Lightning. They were able to get past the Capitals with what some will call the third line, the Kessel, Bonino, Hagelin line, doing most of the work. Crosby had no goals in the series against the Caps. Malkin had 1. They had 4 points between the 2 of them. That's not good enough, and it won't be to get past the Lightning. They will need to score, even though Tampa Bay is still missing Steven Stamkos. The Penguins need to do better on the penalty kill. They were stellar in the first round against the Rangers. They were horrible against the Capitals. Granted, the Caps have Ovechkin. The Caps went 5-for-23 in the series. The Penguins 3-for-19, but were 1-for-16 heading into Game 6. Capitalized on that double minor to Orpik. The Penguins will need to get the power play rolling back to the way it was in the first round, where it scored 8 goals. Second round, not good enough. And again, the Caps have a good penalty kill as well. Solid defenseman, and most likely the Vezina winning goaltender in Braden Holtby. Also up for the Ted Lindsay Award. Had a factor in the Penguins not producing on the power play. The Lightning power play struggled against the Islanders. 3-for-19 in the series. Penguins should be able to keep that going. The Lightning are a one-line team, the triplet line. Have to worry about Jonathan Drouin. No Stamkos, which would be a bigger worry, especially since he's in a contract year. Teams haven't been able to exploit the fact they are a one-line team. The Penguins' depth and speed should be able to exploit it. I've heard people predict the Lightning to win this series, again disrespecting Matt Murray and net. I don't get how someone could predict the Lightning to win this series. After the Penguins dispatched the Rangers and the Capitals, the President's Trophy winning Capitals in 6 games, and did it with Crosby and Malkin not scoring. You expect them to go off. You expect them to have a big series. Crosby only had 6 shots in the last 2 games of this series. 14 for the series. Not enough. Needs to be more selfish. Shoot the puck. They do need to get more power plays. Only 19 for them in the series against the Capitals. The Lightning only had 19 in their series against the Isles, which shows that, at least in the East, penalties are being called. In the Penguins-Caps Game 6, you have to call those penalties. Delay game, there's no wiggle room. Puck goes out of play, you have to call it. You can't look past it, unlike a slash or a hook. You can look the other way. It's not a black and white rule. Did he barely graze him with his stick, or did he slash? Those penalties usually are going to get looked past by the referees, especially when you get into the conference finals, the cup finals. They'll start to let more go. Almost 4 per game with the Isles and Lightning. Just 3 on average for the Penguins. Almost 4 for the Caps in that series. Par for the course for a conference semifinals. In the West, nothing is settled. 2 Game 7s to determine the Western Conference Finals. Wednesday night, it will be the Stars and the Blues going at it. The Blues, for some strange reason, did not show up for the first period of Game 6 on home ice. The Stars go up 3-0 after 1. Elliott gets pulled. Probably won't come back for Game 7 because he was exploited high glove. The Stars know what to do to beat him. If he comes back in net for Game 7, I would expect the Stars to do the same thing, get a chance to shoot, go high glove, you figured out how to beat them. The best case scenario for the Blues, they start Jake Allen and have a chance to beat the Stars. And it's weird to talk about the Blues goaltending, because all series long it's been the Stars goaltending, which has been the question. Kari Lehtinen, Antti Niemi, revolving door between the pipes. Lehtinen was stellar in Game 6, made a big save late to keep it 3-2 as the Stars won that game to force Game 7. The Stars, the best team in the West. Still missing Tyler Seguin. He skated. Not sure if he'll be able to play in Game 7. It's an Achilles. They tried pushing him early in the first round against the Wild. He suffered a setback. Even if they can get 10 minutes out of them for the game, a couple minutes per period and power play time could be enough to get them over the hump into the conference finals. Heads may roll in St. Louis if they don't win Game 7. Then they'll be considered chokers. They had to go to Game 7 to eliminate Chicago after they were up 3-1. Historically, teams need a short series at some point in the playoffs. The Penguins had a short one with the Rangers going 5. The Lightning had 2 short series. It helps on the way to the Cup having time off. Allows players to heal. Had they not pushed Seguin in the series against the Wild, he may have already been back in this series, may have been effective. This series might not have gone 7 games, but it's a mistake they made early on in the playoffs, and they're paying for it, and they may not have their second best player in the lineup in an elimination game. The Stars' power play has fallen off in the playoffs. It was a threat during regular season. It hasn't been this postseason. 6-for-36. In this series, it's 2-for-17. The much maligned penalty kill of the St. Louis Blues, getting the job done against one of the best power plays in the league. Their power play, 5-for-20 in the series. It's effective. It's making Dallas pay for taking penalties. They can't be as aggressive on their forecheck, while St. Louis can, due to the fact they're killing power plays. The matchup between the pipes will determine which team advances. If Elliott starts, Dallas should win this game. If Allen starts, the Blues should win this game. I'm expecting Elliott, the guy they've run all season long, since Allen was injured midway through the season. They're not going to throw a guy in there off of what he did in two periods of action when Dallas sat back, tried to protect a 3-0 lead, ended up winning it 3-2. The other game 7 in the West, the Nashville Predators and San Jose Sharks. This is a game that will define the San Jose Sharks. They've choked in the past. If they lose this game, after being up 3-2 in the series, Joe Thornton, Joe Pavelski will most likely be shipped out of town. This will be the time when they blow everything up. They've tried everything else, tried different goaltenders, have Martin Jones this year, but you can't kill the Predators. If the Sharks lose this series, they'll be complaining that Game 4 should have been theirs. They scored a goal in the first overtime, but there was incidental contact with the goaltender on the play. When you look back at the play, the forward was pushed into the goaltender, but referees aren't going to give leeway on that. Throughout the season and over the years, players have embellished that. They'll take a little bump and they'll fall into a goaltender because they know they can get away with it. Cost the Sharks the game-winning goal in overtime. And then in triple overtime, the Predators scored. San Jose did bounce back in Game 5, blew out the Predators, but then Nashville came back in Game 6, won it in overtime. It was a 2-2 game going into the third. In Game 6, the Sharks got one power play chance for the game, scored on it, went up 3-2, but Nashville tied it a couple minutes later, and then won it in overtime. The Sharks need to get more power play attempts in Game 7 if they want to win this series. They're 6-for-18 in the series on the power play, 11-for-39 this postseason. A lethal power play, the best power play in the playoffs. And if they can get more than one power play, they should be able to eliminate the Predators, who are playing just their second Game 7 in franchise history, and it's the second this postseason. I'm expecting the Joes, Pavelski and Thornton, to get the job done, get that monkey off their back, and make it to the Western Conference Finals. The NHL has released the finalists for a couple of awards. MVP, no surprise, Patrick Kane and Sidney Crosby among the list of finalists. The other one, Jamie Benn, is a surprise, captain of the best team in the West. Kind of surprised he's up for the Lindsay Award, which is the MVP voted on by the players. Patrick Kane is a finalist, along with Braden Holtby, no surprise, with him tying Martin Brodeur's record for wins in a season. But Jamie Benn is also up for that award. But when you are the captain of the best team in the West, fought for the President's Trophy for a while with the Capitals, I can see him being a finalist. The Jack Adams Award for the best coach in the National Hockey League, Barry Trotz, Lindsey Ruff, and Gerard Gallant, all three worthy of being finalists for this award. A lot of good coaches this year. I didn't expect Sullivan to be in contention for this mid-season, taking over the Penguins. The Panthers won their division, Stars won their division, Capitals President's Trophy winners. Surprise Bruce Boudreau wasn't in the finalists, maybe over Gallant, being there all season long, talks of him maybe being fired during the season, takes his team to win the Pacific Division, then loses in Game 7 to the Preds and gets fired, and he's hired in Minnesota. Doesn't go the rest of the playoffs without having a job, not even 2 weeks. The Ottawa Senators have their new head coach, Guy Boucher, former Lightning coach, been out of work for a little while in the NHL. He's back in the league with the Ottawa Senators. To the ECHL playoffs, the Western Conference Finals are set, the Eastern Conference Finals up in the air, as there are two Game 7s. I'll start in the West. Steelheads fans should not be too disappointed, as the Allen Americans eliminated the Missouri Mavericks in 6 games. Didn't take them as long to dispatch of the Mavericks as it did the Steelheads, but Allen, a team that is always in the title game of the league they're in of late, whether it's the CHL, now the ECHL, if you're going to bet on a team going into the playoffs, it's the Allen Americans. In the playoffs, 13-for-55 on the power play, 24%. 3-for-19 since the last show, weren't able to use the power play to their advantage as they did against the Steelheads. They were able to find offense in other ways, and they were able to hold Missouri in check, 1-for-13 on the power play. Their abysmal power play, which ended the playoffs 8-for-45, is why the Mavericks, the best team in the regular season in the Western Conference, is not making it to the conference finals. Fort Wayne swept Utah. The Grizzlies, while they were able to get past Colorado, a team they were familiar with, couldn't get a victory against Fort Wayne. The Comets' power play was 2-for-9 in the two other games since the last show, while the Grizzlies were 2-for-11. That was their Achilles heel throughout the playoffs. The power play did not get the job done for Utah. It didn't keep in the games against the Comets. Allen versus Fort Wayne in the West Finals, and my money's on Allen. It's been on Allen since the start, even though we covered the Steelheads on this show. I expected Allen to beat them. I was hoping for a Steelheads win, but I expected Allen to make it out of that series. I thought they would beat the Mavericks, thought it would take one more game, but they did advance, and I'm expecting them to be in the Kelly Cup Finals representing the Western Conference. Over in the East, the Wheeling Nailers and Reading Royals will be going to a Game 7. Wheeling won Games 1, 4, and 6 in the series. The Nailers have already experienced being on the brink of elimination once, and dominated the Royals 8-3 in that game. The 7th and deciding game of this series is Wednesday night, and since the Nailers are the ECHL affiliate of the Penguins, I'll be pulling card for Wheeling to advance. Lots of power play attempts in the East. In this series, Wheeling is 7-for-26 on the power play. In the games they've won, it's been a catalyst. They're 11-for-55 in the playoffs, clicking at 20%. That's a lot of power plays through two series. Reading's 3-for-27. That's why they can't get the job done in this series. That's why they didn't close out Game 6. 8-for-51 in the playoffs. Not able to use it as a weapon in a series with plenty of power play chances. In the other series in the East, it's Adirondack and South Carolina going to a Game 7. The Stingrays forced Game 7 on Tuesday. They'll be playing that Wednesday as well. Adirondack won all the odd games in this series. South Carolina's won all the even games in this series. If I'm going to pick a winner in this series, I'll go with Adirondack because they've won all the odd-numbered games. The power play in this series. Adirondack is 3-for-40 on the power play. 40 power plays. One of the games of this series, they had 11 power play chances. Where are these officials in the NHL? Let's get some of these guys up there so we can get some more power plays in the playoffs. They're willing to call it. South Carolina's had 28 power play chances, and they've scored on 7 of them. That's just in this series. I wish the NHL would start calling penalties a little more when you get to the conference finals, cup finals. I'd like to see how many penalties are called in the Kelly Cup finals and the conference finals. While it's a developmental league and you'll have more penalties called, it would be nice to see some of the calls in the NHL made like they are in the lower leagues, the AHL, ECHL, even college, where they're willing to call penalties more, willing to do their job later in the season. There are too many calls in the NHL that are blatant that they don't make. I go back to Game 6 with the Penguins, Connor Sheary, there's a blatant hook on him, he goes down to the ice, ref looks at it, lets it go. You've had plays in the past, go back to the Penguins-Bruins series. The game that was determined, Jágr gets away with a hook, leads to a goal, and that ends a game. You go back to instances, if the officials did their job, maybe games are different, and I hate complaining about refs. To see 40 power plays in one series is mind-boggling. That will do it for the final episode of Two Sports Nuts. The show is ending. I've kept it going for the last 4 months while John started his new job, hoping he might come back to the show. He won't be rejoining the show, and I joined the show because it was a two-man show, and I was doing it with my friend, talking sports, Pittsburgh guy, Philly guy, fun banter back and forth, and the only reason I did the show was because my friend asked me to do one with him. We had a nice run, 4 years, pretty long to have a show, but it's time to end it. In this episode, I opened up with Major League Baseball, went to the NBA, did some NHL and ECHL playoffs. I'm Jerome Shell saying thanks for listening to this or any episode of Two Sports Nuts.